Maybe that's something somebody could look into.
Okay, we'll try to see what that amounts to, although other states have varying degrees of tort limits and liabilities totally, so it's kind of sometimes indirectly hard to figure.
I understand, but it still could be.
Right. Thank you very much. Let's move then to House Bill 2429, Charlie Williamson and Barney Marks.
Madam Chair, Charles Williamson, OTLA. This bill simply broadens the protection afforded to commercial liability insurance policyholders to everybody. It says that the commissioner, insurance commissioner has to approve.
I can't hear you, Charlie.
I'm sorry. It says that the insurance commissioner has to approve any policy but which allows the deduction from the amount of the coverage of your defense costs. We initially had proposed this bill to simply outlaw such policies. The case was made to the House Judiciary Committee that that might make some policies unavailable in Oregon, or at least that wouldn't be available from another source. So a compromise was struck there that simply says that the insurance commissioner has to approve such policies.
Are there questions? We dealt with this the last session in the tort reform, so some of us are more familiar than others with it. We had it in applying to commercial only, so thank you, Charlie. Barney?
Yeah, I'm Barney Marks from Portland, Oregon, with the Oregon Surplus Line Association. I have no testimony. I just wanted to express our support for the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions of either one of our witnesses? Thank you very much. Thanks. Okay, let's move to, well, I don't see Kelly Clark. We'll send for Kelly Clark in about 15 minutes. In the meantime, have 2764, Keith Burns and Ron Smith.
Madam Chair, I'm puzzled on 2429. There's no opposition to this bill from the insurance industry?
I would say that this is very it's not a normal event. Not carried. This practice is not used in very many policies as it is, and so it's not exist.
So there really isn't any opposition
right.
to it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Been no testimony against it either.
Yeah.
Hasn't been.
Keith,
come on. Keith Burns, 2764.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Keith Burns. I represent the Oregon Financial Services Association. The purpose of this bill is to amend the method of service of summons in small claims courts. Historically, the served by mail, it was under $50, and then by personal service over $50. Well, the $50 was in there when the small claims limit was about $200, and it's now up to $2,500. Of course, any judgment taken against a defendant in small claims court, the cost of the service of the summons is added on to the judgment as costs, and this would reduce that amount, making the cost in small claims be less than what it is now. This would provide that all small claims could be served by certified mail. Our initial bill had the clerk of the court doing the service by certified mail. The judicial department came in and asked for the amendment to have the plaintiff do that, and we have no objections to it. So that's what the bill does, is allow service by certified mail. As you know, in the circuit courts under Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure, with a court order, you could have the most, biggest case that ever come to the court served by certified mail. So it's not a unique thing or something that is less effective by way of giving notice to the defendant than other means of service.
So the only, you don't have an Ann Gross bill. We have a, an amendment.
Just the amendment. It changes the one word from clerk to plaintiff.
Madam Chair,
Senator Grinsky.
This is a real good idea. It's pretty cut and dried. Are you interested in a work session on this?
It's not. We did actually have one more. We have Ron Smith. Is Ron here to testify? Come on up. Is it? Okay, yeah. It is listed as work session, so as soon as Mr. Smith is finished. Quickly?
Madam Chair, we have two people.
I had signed up to testify also. Maybe on, it was on a separate sheet.
Okay, come on up. Oh, here it is. Bob, there you are. Got so many pieces.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are several areas that have not been addressed as respects perfection of service by mailing, specifically as pertains to any type of subservice. The bill requires that the addressee be served by the postal, you know, postman, whoever it happens to be, and they must obtain their signature. I think that that's going to be extremely difficult in most instances and will require that it go back out for individual service, and we'll end up with an additional fee for a process server as well as for the registered mail. One of the areas that...
Could I stop you? You're signed up in favor of it. Your testimony is...
Partially. I would suggest that I am in favor of the bill, provided that the limits for mailing be limited to $200. That's the small claims area of jurisdiction is $200 exclusively. It can go into district court above $200 if there's an answer.
Did you say 200 or 250, and do you have amendments to offer the OSS?
No.
Okay. 200 or 250? I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
200 is the present exclusive jurisdiction of small claims.
Madam Chair,
Senator Shoemaker.
If the problem is that you think this is just going to be a burden because the defendant won't accept service by certified mail, why does the dollar limit make any difference?
Historically, it has been $50. I would suggest that in keeping with the small claims jurisdiction, exclusive jurisdiction, that it could possibly be increased to $200 and not create any additional burdens. The court administrators that I've had the opportunity to discuss this bill with are not particularly enthralled in that they've had some difficulties with mailed service before.
Do we have evidence of that?
I'd like to be able to testify to that, but I don't.
Madam Chair.
Senator Grinsky.
I agree that it's not easy to serve through certified mail, especially when you're trying to collect a debt, but it is an option under this thing. It's not required. And if some people think they can serve that way, why not let them give it a try? The second thing is, if jurisdiction of small claims is $200, that's inherent in the bill, isn't it, that they can serve that way? The $50 language has already been eliminated. It's been amended out of the bill. So I don't understand what the concern is. The section being amended is for ORS 46.445, which is the small claims statute.
Correct.
Then it's built in that there's a $200 limit. So I don't understand why you think you need the language in here that just says it again. Am I missing something?
Madam Chair, Senator Grinsky, my suggestion was rather than allowing the change that would increase the where you can mail all small claims, the small claims would be limited to for mailing to $200. Any small claim would be limited to, for mailing would be limited to $200, rather than $2,500, up to $2,500.
So which, do you have a specific amendment, or?
I'm going to leave that to Bob.
Okay, Bob, you want to comment?
I don't have an amendment drafted for that. For the record, my name is Bob Kaiser. I represent the Oregon Association of Process Servers. One of the other concerns that has been brought up by some of the court administrators and people involved in serving process is that service by certified mail, a person has the option of refusing delivery. In other words, you can actually look at the letter that's being sent to you and then refuse to sign
for
it.
At that point, they'd have to go and get a process server if they hadn't dealt with it. Isn't that true, though?
Correct. Or have the sheriff serve.
Okay. And we have, there isn't, I haven't heard, I don't see anybody sign up here from the courts or the clerks. So
it's my understanding that the local courts, they can't testify. They can't come in and testify before the committee. That's what I was told by a representative of one of the courts.
I don't believe that's the case, but thank you anyway.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yes, if I may, Madam Chair, the Judicial Department is represented by Mr. Linden, and he said with that amendment, changing from the clerk to the plaintiff, they had no objections to the bill.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's move. Is Representative Clark here? Well, Representative Clark isn't here. Let's take. Where is Ted Calora here? Is he in the room? Ted isn't here. Well,
here's Clark.
Come on, Kelly. House Bill 3455. House Bill 3455.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Kelly Clark, State Representative from District 27 in Clackamas County. House Bill 3455 comes to you at my request, at the request of Representative Kevin Mannix, and at the request of Payless Drugstores. And it would be helpful for you to know a brief bit of history about this bill. Representative Mannix introduced a bill early in the session that would grant immunity to people who donated food items. And I don't know where that bill is in your process.
You heard it.
You heard it this morning. Okay. This bill, originally Payless came in and said, hey, how about if we amend the bill to allow donors of merchandise to do the same thing? We ran into a problem with the relating clause. The relating clause was not broad enough to allow us to do that, so we created a separate bill to do this. This bill is an attempt to make it possible for people of good intentions to do good things. And those would be people who are merchants of merchandise and would like to be able to donate that merchandise to people less fortunate. The obvious problem that they have now is concerns over liability. And this bill is an attempt to craft a common ground, middle ground, and say that if you donate general merchandise in a careful and reasonable fashion, we're not going to hold you responsible, not going to hold you liable in the same way as we would hold you if you were selling it. It's an attempt, frankly to encourage charitable and generous activities. Two points of the bill that I would like to point out and then try and answer questions. One thing that we did, if you look on page 2 of the bill, beginning lines 3, going through line 5, made it very clear that a manufacturer is still online in the event of a recall. That just because the manufacturer has donated merchandise rather than sold it, if there's a safety recall by the state or the federal government, that the manufacturer still has to go through the same steps that the manufacturer would have to go through in the event that those items were sold. Again, an attempt to keep the manufacturer responsible for the actions in a reasonable way. And then we, on page one of the bill, line 10, we accepted out gross negligence, recklessness, or intentional conduct of the donor, so that all this bill does is exempt the donor from ordinary negligence, and so that hopefully there won't be any abuse in the situation. I think with that, I'll try and answer questions. I noticed that folks from Payless Drugstores are here, and they have a whole lot better sense for how this is going to work in practice than I do. I just know what we tried to do in on the House side and Judiciary with the recall provision and with the gross negligence, recklessness, and intentional conduct provision. So with that, I'll stop and try and answer your questions.
You have people have questions?
Just one.
Senator Hill?
Kelly, how does it affect the manufacturer's liability? Does it affect it at all?
Well, yes, it would. It would limit their liability to acts of gross negligence, recklessness, or intentional conduct. So basically, simple negligence would be accepted for donated products.
And so that's a change from the usual.
Yes. Yes.
Why is that?
Well, it's simply a social trade-off that we're saying that it's important enough to encourage the donation to that we think that it's probably a reasonable trade-off.
Well, see, I guess the thing is, I don't have any problem, say, with Payless or the retailers, because they donate the product because they didn't manufacture it. If something happens, though, the product is some way defective, why would you limit the liability of the manufacturer?
Well, there's a practical problem, Senator, in that many of the manufacturers will pull their product lines from a retailer if that manufacturer finds out that the retailer is out there donating merchandise and the manufacturer is not exempt from liability.
How many is this? How much of the product? Well, and we'll ask the Payless folks. How much of this type of product is it likely to be donated? Because let's assume you get rid of a cache of semi-defective lawnmowers, and we're going to sort of take away the manufacturer's liability by the fact that it was donated, and then someone else who gets hurt by one that actually got bought from Payless Drugstore. The recovery is different between someone who buys a legitimate same lawnmower. One gets bought, purchased at Payless, and the other one they give away, and we're going to change the individual's standing somehow. And I guess that's the piece that is somewhat bothersome for me, and I think that's what Senator Hill's driving at, and I wonder whether you've done it or not.
Well, the thing is that the retail, the manufacturer has already been paid. And if the retailer decides to donate it, it really should not matter in terms of liability. Because again, I want to set the retailer aside. I think that this is good. And the reason I don't think the retailer should be involved in it, they did not manufacture the product. They would not know whether it's defective or not. It would be bothersome to me though that the manufacturer would be removed from liability simply on the basis that something has been given, and I don't know why they would snatch their product because they've already been paid for it.
Right.
And as long as they get paid, I don't see where it matters to them whether the product was given away or sold, as long as they've been paid.
Madam Chair. Senator Hill, I've been looking at this. I don't see that the manufacturer would be released from liability unless the manufacturer is the donor. If the retailer is the donor, I don't see that this affects the manufacturer's liability.
Well, I suppose if you look at
where do you
page 2, line 7, the definition of donor.
Well, that is, if, as I read that, if the manufacturer is the donor, he is still responsible for recall requirements.
That's correct.
His limitation of liability would depend upon section 2 sub 1, which extends a limitation of liability to donors. that's the way I read it. Am I right or wrong?
Well, Madam Chair.
Well, maybe we should clarify that then in defining donor is, includes a general merchandiser or retail establishment or manufacturer of general merchandise or household items who or which donates such items as contemplated by this act or something of that sort.
I guess the problem I have there, though, is that it still doesn't address the question that I have, which is, so you get the lawnmower manufacturer that says, well, we're closing out this line, and so we're going to donate. We're going to be a donor, and you still have a, how am I going to tell my constituent who gets hurt by a by one of those lawnmowers as opposed to one that the person who got, who actually purchased one? I'm still concerned about that part.
You mean where the manufacturer is the donor?
I think it's something we have to.
I would like to, if I could, ask Mr. Yokoyama from Payless to come up, because we toyed in on the House side with accepting out the manufacturers, and he was able to explain to us the practical problem that raises.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing me this morning. For the record, my name is Bob Yokoyama, and I'm here representing Payless Drugstores Northwest Incorporated. As a direct answer to Senator Hill's and Senator Cohen's concerns, first of all, in the real world, the manufacturer will not allow us to donate it. They come into our damage center, write us a credit, so that we cut down costs on their end and our end. They say, go ahead and just destroy it, throw it in the garbage, and we won't go through all the process of having to ship it to a manufacturer's plant, have it checked in and refurbished or whatever. What we're trying to do here is getting the indemnification so that the manufacturers will release the goods to Payless to allow us then to give to a bona fide charitable organization. If we don't get this passed, basically the manufacturers will insist on getting it destroyed, which means it just goes in the garbage, ends up in the landfill, scavengers pick it up, it ends up in the flea market. We're trying to help the needy through this steps. Other times, there is product that there's a thing called a defective allowance, and what that means is that a manufacturer gives us a percentage from all purchases to cover the small incidents of defects. And defects, we're talking about things like a packaging that is cut open by a box knife because they were trying to open the outer shipping case. And so now we have toothpaste with the outer carton just cut open, or Alka-Seltzer where the foil is completely sealed. It's just that the outer packaging now is not attractive in order for the manufacturer to obtain their high quality standard on the shelves through the retailer. And those goods, they still are paying for it, so therefore they're paying us credit through purchases, 1%, 2%, and they're saying we still want it destroyed if it's not saleable. And we've talked to many manufacturers that say if you can indemnify us from liability, things with dents and scratches and things, if it can help someone, great. We're talking about, just with Payless, an accumulation of about $2 million in merchandise, because this is the one center in Tualatin, Oregon that processes all the returns, customer returns, for 275 stores from 9 western states. So here Oregonians have a great opportunity to be the sole beneficiary of what's accumulated in all these other states.
Madam Chair.
Sure.
Well, then, you do intend that when Payless contributes something, that both Payless and the manufacturer liability will be limited?
Yes.
Okay, so if I don't think that's what the bill says, but that's what you intend that it
do. Probably does under donor. I think it does.
Unless.
Senator Hill.
I don't agree, but we can fix it.
Well, I guess the kind of the basic idea is that it would seem to me, regardless of whether, I can understand the, if there's some defect with the, usually something that is not, maybe just affects the marketability of the product, but if something is dangerous, then it should neither be sold nor given away. And I guess that's my problem that I have with this. I mean, I understand the point of view of the manufacturer, but if it's defective and someone's going to be injured, it doesn't matter to me whether you buy it or whether you give it away, because, I mean, what good is it going to, you're doing to give something away to somebody that's going to injure them?
Madam Chair.
That certainly does not accomplish, you know, any kind of a charitable purpose.
Madam Chair.
Please, Kelly.
Senator Hill, we try to get at that through the recall provision, because once it's clear that a particular item is dangerous, we wanted to put the manufacturer or the retailer in the same situation as if they had sold that merchandise. And a matter of fact, to their credit, I think the recall provision was suggested as an amendment by Payless, who said that they were willing to put themselves and their manufacturers through that, just as if they had sold, and they have to go through all of the hoops that they have to go through when there's a safety recall issued, so that the gap that's left there are those items between the time that the dangerous defect is discovered and when the recall order can begin to be implemented. That's the window of the limitation of liability there.
So you would keep track of, and the donations is the same way you keep track of purchases?
Our charitable organizations that we've been working with is basically through Oregon Free Materials, the Division of Department of Corrections, who keeps bona fide lists of all items received from their donors and processed through their 250 agencies. I'd be more than happy to entertain if there's any language that may be added that would exclude this concern you have, Senator Hill, about anything that may be deemed dangerous, whether it could be in the definition of gross negligence. More than happy to entertain.
Okay. Thank you.
I think that, yes, the sense of the committee is that we would like to see if we can narrow it just a little bit, or at least put some reassuring perimeters in it. Catherine?
Yeah, I was also concerned, Representative Clark, did you look at the constitutionality of this? Was that raised at all? Did your committee talk about it?
From what perspective?
From a perspective of that people who may now have a right to go into court for suits for injuries would not have a right to a jury trial, or from some equal protection because different classes of people had been separated out, and whether or not there was a state interest in it.
Well, the equal protection argument, seems to me that you can make a real good argument that the state has a legitimate reason for and a rational basis for distinguishing between these two classes of people, namely that you're making a social choice here, that you're going to benefit a whole class of people by encouraging donations to people who wouldn't otherwise be recipients of this stuff. The trade-off there is that you're going to limit their access to come in and sue the people who gave it to them. And, you know, that argument in terms of defeating an equal protection claim might not be successful, but there's your argument. The jury trial question I don't believe came up, and I'd have to think that one through.
Is there also a tax deduction at the state or federal level for these donated goods? I think that might also come into the constitutional issue in a tangential way.
My understanding on the federal level is that a donor may write off on taxes one half of their cost, the distance between one half their cost and one half of retail, never to exceed the market value of the product at the time. Now, in most cases, with the gross margins that retailers today, discounters work with, I can't see, as a layman, not an accountant, where there would be a tax benefit, because a product would never have a market value higher than the cost in its defective state. After things are donated to an agency, then remote control cars, toys may be fixed by the school of the deaf in Salem or whatever, and then their market value would increase, but at the time of the donation from a retailer, that value would be at cost, if not less, and therefore, I don't see a tax benefit at this point.
Thank you.
Okay, so you're not going to just take the credit from the wholesalers, the manufacturers, and then also come in, if you've got $2 million worth of merchandise and find yourself another few million dollars of, or a few hundred thousand dollars worth of tax credits from the federal government because you've given away this to charity? I need to ask that for the record.
The cost of the item to us at that point would be zero if the manufacturer gave us the credit at what we purchased it at, and which they do.
So then you could not report a contribution deduction from your federal?
Not from my viewpoint could I see an opportunity to take that. I have not looked into the state statutes.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Thank you very much. We will do a little more examination and get back to both of you. Appreciate
thank you. There's one more person who had signed up that would like to make a short statement. His name is John Matthews with the Oregon Free Materials in support of this bill.
Okay.